No problem. Good evening. Okay. So, just going to start. Have we had any apologies, Monica?
I've had no apologies, Chairman.
Okay. Does anybody have any declarations of interest? No? We're all right on that. The minutes of the meeting from the 7th of January. Has everybody read them and agree? Do we agree they're accurate? I think they are. Am I in the wrong place?
No, you're quite right, but you can just propose them.
Would you propose them second? Thank you very much. That's fine. And if we could just have a show of hands, please, all in favour. Thank you. Abstention? Oh, have they? Sorry, I didn't notice the end. Right, I'll sign those then. Gosh, 2 months gone by. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Has there been any urgent business?
No, there hasn't, Chair.
Okay. So now I pass on to the monitoring officer for the annual report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This report will be particularly familiar to those borough councillors who were at the last council meeting, because it was circulated as part of that agenda. So it's a report that I've presented already. But the purpose of revisiting the report this evening is twofold. First of all, it allows the parish council members of the committee to hear the update as well. And in addition, within this forum, I'm able to give more or to give detail in a way that I can't in the council chamber. So matters of housekeeping that are contained within the report, you'll see that I've appointed Linda Durham as my deputy monitoring officer. That's following Chris Eberly moving to a new job with a different authority. I also have to report on any usage of our powers under RIPA, and as has been the case in all previous years that I've brought this report, the council hasn't engaged in any covert surveillance, so there have been no applications for RIPA authorisations, and there haven't been any non-RIPA type surveillance. It's the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, so it's covert type surveillance. And there are instances where the council can apply to court in order to engage in covert activities directed at targeted individuals, but there's been no occasion when that's been used. So that's a nil report, really. And I also give an annual roundup of the traffic that's come across my desk in terms of ethical standards and the work that's come to this committee as well. And what's pleasing to be able to report is that there's been a significant downturn in the number of matters that have been brought to me under that umbrella in the past year. So at 6.3 of my report, I've just outlined in broad brush terms the number of complaints that have come to me and the characteristics of those complaints. So I had two formal complaints about one particular borough councillor. It's now a former borough councillor, and I can tell you within these walls that those complaints were made concerning former councillor Dale Spedding, who has now resigned from the council. So I'll draw a line under that and say no more about it. There was a formal complaint about possible breaches of the code of conduct brought by a member of the public directed at a parish councillor who was a member of Marchington Parish Council. And having assessed that complaint, I found that there was no breach. It arose really from a planning application that had stirred up quite a lot of strong feelings within the community, and a particular member of the public felt that the parish council had behaved in an improper way by circulating an informative leaflet within the village And in particular, they were aggrieved that this particular parish councillor seemed to have had a hand in drafting the leaflet. But when I read it, it was simply a case of saying this application is happening, it's in the pipeline, and if you want to look at the details, they're on the Borough Council websites. There was nothing that that engaged my interest as a monitoring officer, because it didn't go to the code of conduct in any sense, let alone breach it. And then there were two formal complaints that I've mentioned that were about two members of another parish council. And I did give Councillor Florence Dukes a heads up in advance of this meeting that I would be talking about this matter in detail, because she's one of the parish council members in this instance. It concerns Horning Glow and Eaton Park Parish Council. And there were two complaints that were made within the context of wider issues, really, that have affected that parish council. And as it says in my report, I've been working quite closely with their parish clerk in a bid to try and just address the totality of the issues. So the two complaints are not something that I'm going to be bringing to this standards committee, because I think that they can be better dealt with in an informal way as part of this wider piece of work. And I hope that will then have a positive effect for the business of the parish council, and then obviously for the wider community as well, and also actually for the parish clerk, who is not having the easiest of time, I suppose, marshalling all of the different personalities that are involved here. So I'm happy to answer any questions that arise from that report, but that probably brings to an end what I want to say at this point.
Does anybody have any questions?
Does complaint concerning parish councillors come to you or come to that parish council?
It comes to me. The monitoring officer for the Borough Council has oversight of member conduct matters arising from any of the parish councils within that borough.
But it is possible for people to take a look with their clerk first.
I suppose so, in an informal way, but the way that the standards regime operates, the monitoring officer for the borough is given the task of enforcing the standards regime at the parish level also.
Yes, certainly.
The reason why I asked the question, because in my parish council, there is designated a councillor for a complaint.
I wonder if you're thinking of the internal complaints procedure, which we have as well and would be dealt with by Monica and her colleague Andrea in our democratic services team. And we have a three-stage complaints process, which then can lead to the local government and social care ombudsman. So perhaps that's what you're thinking of. It would be quite standard for a parish council to have that sort of a formal complaints route also. That's okay.
Anything else? Okay. And now, number six, the update report.
And again, this is, I think this is probably why Councillor Florence Dukes isn't here this evening, because following the drafting of this report and me bringing it through to full council, I mentioned when I addressed those members who are present on the night that I'd had another complaint in, and that was by a borough councillor, and it was directed at a borough councillor. It's something that was dealt with by my new deputy Linda Durham. It was a complaint that came in from Councillor Grosvenor, and it concerned Councillor Florence Dukes, and it concerned remarks that she'd made during a telephone conversation with the Chief Executive. And having assessed the complaint, Mrs. Durham has concluded the matter on the basis that there has been no breach of the Code of Conduct. So she's concluded the matter. I should say also that she did consult the independent person, Mr. Goodall, who's on holiday tonight, which is why he's not here. But she followed the procedure, sought his views, and based on her own feeling on the matter and based on what Graham Goodall had to say. She concluded it on the basis that there'd been no breach of the code of conduct, so that matter's at an end now. So that was the update I needed to bring to you.
That's good. Okay. Does anyone have any other business they'd like to? Are we done?
Sure. If I could. I did wonder if people... If this is the first time that we've convened since the 7th of January meeting.
Yes.
And I thought, with your permission, if members have any comments that they wanted to raise...
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
...arising from the experience of that, or if there are any questions that people wanted to ask as a result of what had happened on that evening, then it might be an opportunity to do that. There might not be anything, but we could use it as sort of lessons learned if people wanted to. Yes, it was. They do tend to be pretty lengthy because there's usually quite a lot of detail to go through. That was probably the lengthiest one that we've had for a little while, I think, it's fair to say. But they do run for, you know, quite a good number of hours on each occasion. And it's not the first time that the committee have had to resolve to suspend standing orders to go beyond the 3 hours, for example.
Mrs. Trenery.
It struck me on the night, as I think on the agenda it said that at the start the chair would outline the process of the meeting and how that would all work through, and I don't think that happened at the time, and there was some confusion in the meeting about exactly what process we were following, because there were sort of two different versions of what the process of the meeting was. So I was just thinking it would have been helpful, certainly for me as a new person, if at the beginning of the meeting, you know, that process had been outlined.
Right, okay.
The procedure was as advertised, so you'd all had it as part of your agenda pack. There were various points, you'll have picked up, there were various points taken by the solicitor for the subject member throughout, but that was to do with their house style, I think, rather than to do with any particular failings. For example, there was one occasion where they were looking at the numbering from the Constitution rather than the numbering in the agenda. And as is quite often the case, if something's transplanted from one document into another, it follows the numbering of the agenda that's hosting it. So the wording was exactly the same. It might have said paragraph 4 rather than paragraph 2, but it was exactly the same wording, for example. And perhaps you've got in mind where she was challenging her interpretation of preliminary issues. So there have been, and she was particularly challenging, or she was requiring me to define what I meant by preliminary issues. What generally happens is that parties, during the course of my pre-hearing discussion with them, will alert me to the fact that there might be an issue that I need to allow them to address beforehand. That hadn't happened in this case, and it was slightly unusual, but these things are always very unusual. None really run to exactly the same pattern. So coming back to your question, really, Chris, in general terms, it followed exactly the same format as they always do, but there will always be something that comes up that is brand new and has never been encountered before. But as far as the procedure, that will have been circulated beforehand with the agenda pack, so it's there for everybody to read. So the fact that the chair didn't outline it on the night, I don't think, had any particular impact, although it was capitalised on. Yeah, we followed the same sequence.
Somebody will put their case and then commit.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. I think what happened was, Chairman, you gave quite a lot of leeway to the solicitor for...
Yes, she went out of
Councillor
sequence.
Hussain, and she did go out of sequence, so she was given a greater opportunity to speak than was advertised on the procedure. So that was certainly the case. But in fairness to the chairman, I think it was sensible that you allowed that to run.
I was expecting the committee members to get a chance to ask questions, and that didn't happen. Things were going on so
Yeah. And that's one of the points I wanted to make, actually, because obviously you did have opportunities to ask questions, but and you certainly did, and you asked some very insightful questions and got to the heart of the matter. I think as a matter of general guidance, there were a couple of members who, rather than ask questions, made statements, and it can be difficult, but if everyone could avoid doing that in future, particularly when it can give an indication of how they're viewing something, and it might allow a party to form possibly the erroneous view that people have already made their minds up, when of course you hadn't, and you went away to deliberate afterwards. So,
twice where you make your points.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
I do.
And you've got a safe space within which to do that, haven't you? Because the deliberation is in private, which I think is absolutely right, because then it gives you the ability to have a very wide-ranging conversation about the whole detail of the case.
Mm. I do remember asking if anyone had questions on a couple of times. On the procedure at the beginning, I take your point, and I thought, well, we've all seen it, we've got a lot to get through, so we'll just start. And the solicitor, she went off procedure, I think, probably on purpose sometimes as well. And I gave them plenty of time because I didn't want a comeback that they hadn't been given enough time to speak. But I do take the point, and it was it's not an excuse, but it was my very first meeting too, so I was learning as I go along. But but I take your point and try to make it clear next time.
I think you'd found something to argue.
Yeah. Well, now I know that I didn't know. I had to read that out. So. Okay, point take.
That doesn't give them too much time and not enough time.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Is that it? If nobody has any other matters, that would be the closure of this meeting, which is one extreme to the other from the last one. And it is relatively short, and I do appreciate everybody's come out this evening for this, but it's important we have our closed meeting with the monitoring officer to talk about her report and to hold the meeting in case there's an urgent item under Rule 12. So that's why we hold the meeting, even if it's short. But thank you all very much for attending. Thank you.